Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
On the evening of January 6, 1981, Lonene Lonnie Rogers, a 29-year-old mother of two, returned to her home in Hayfield Township, Pennsylvania after work. A blizzard was sweeping through the area, but Lonnie had plans to tell her abusive husband Bud that she and the kids were leaving him for good. According to Bud, the two argued that night and Lonnie left the home around 12:45 a.m., leaving behind her car, purse, hearing aids, and even her children. She was never seen or heard from again. Despite decades of speculation and renewed advocacy efforts, Lonnie's case remains unsolved, leaving her family and community asking, what happened to Lonnie Rogers? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, so Lonnie Rogers, this is another case where many of you are going to come to a conclusion about this case, as I have, and you will be extremely frustrated. But I don't say this to be mysterious or to hold your attention. There's a reason that this case hasn't been solved yet. It's either because law enforcement didn't do their job, there just wasn't enough evidence to implicate a specific person, or we're all looking in the wrong direction. And that's why it's important to cover these cases, not only to have this call to action where people who haven't heard about this case before can potentially come forward to assist in the solving of this case, but also because it's always good to get multiple perspectives. So I always welcome outside opinions, not only because it's necessary to let everyone have a voice and be heard, but in some instances, those outside outlandish ideas could be the direction we need to be going. So ultimately, at the end of the day, why did I decide to cover this case? Well, we need to. The answer is still out there, and the person who's potentially responsible for it is still alive and walking amongst us, even though they're much older now. It's not too late. And we also have Lonnie's daughter, Allison, working with us on this investigation, and she's looking to get more eyes and ears on her mother's case, and she's also working to get a new law enacted. And we're going to talk about it later, but I really think this law is necessary and should be something that's put into effect in all states throughout the country. It should be a federal law, in matter of fact, but we'll talk more about the specifics of that law when we get to it. And the final reason I wanted to cover this case is because it's a part of true crime history, right? It's just like the history books that we're taught in class, where we can go back and we can look at what we did right, what we did wrong, and we can learn from it to make sure we apply those new lessons and that education that we received to future cases. And that's what I try to do. I look at this almost like a textbook where I can see what officers did right and how it ultimately led to a good outcome so I can apply it to my tactics and techniques in the future. And I can also see what investigators and detectives did wrong to make sure that I don't make similar mistakes. So it's important to me, it's important to this community, and it's also extremely important to Lonnie's family. So let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Lonnie Raffel, also known as Lonnie, I'm going to refer to her as Lonnie throughout the remainder of this episode, was born on October 18th, 1951 in Youngstown, Ohio, to parents Maxine and Raymond. She was born deaf but could read lips and was fluent in American Sign Language. Lonnie's hearing impairment never held her back. She lived a full, vibrant life and didn't let her disability define her. Lonnie was known for her fun personality and was often described as the life of the party. She had a deep love for music and could often be found dancing at her parents' studio. After graduating from high school, Lonnie lived with her parents and worked as an assembly worker in a factory. She was also a member of the Erie Silent Club, which was a social club for the deaf community where she enjoyed spending time with others. In 1971, Lonnie met Clinton Bud Rogers at the club. Now, Bud could hear until the age of four when a car accident caused a head injury, leading to hearing loss and the placement of a metal plate in his skull. Like Lonnie, Bud was fluent in American Sign Language as well. When Lonnie and Bud first started dating, their relationship was good. Bud was described as charming, handsome, and kind, which is what earned him the nickname Bud. But Lonnie's parents didn't share the same opinion. They felt like something was off with him. After dating for about a year, Lonnie and Bud got married in October of 1972. They moved into a duplex on Route 98 in Hayfield Township, Pennsylvania, just 100 yards away from Lonnie's grandparents' house. The couple eventually had two children, a daughter Allison, who we had the privilege of working with on this episode, and a son named Aaron. But things in Lonnie and Bud's marriage quickly took a turn. After moving in together, Lonnie began to see a different side of Bud, the side he didn't show to others. Bud had a violent temper and often lashed out at Lonnie. He was controlling, jealous, and abusive. Bud also struggled to stay out of trouble. Not long after they were married, he was arrested for breaking into a car, and he was ordered to pay restitution and blame the crime on the car accident he had experienced as a child. And Lonnie had never found out about this, but a year before they started dating, Bud had been arrested for raping a woman at knife point. Although he was sentenced to 23 months for reduced charges of aggravated assault and battery, Bud served just 6 months before being released on good behavior. Gotta love that judicial system. Even back in the day, still messing it up. As the years passed, Bud's temper and criminal behavior escalated. By November of 1980, things between Bud and Lonnie had become unbearable. To escape the tension, Lonnie took 5-year-old Allison and 3-year-old Aaron to her family's house in Toledo, Ohio for Thanksgiving. While visiting, Lonnie confided in her sister that she planned to tell Bud to leave. She added that she would let him come back to spend Christmas with the kids, but he'd have to leave again once the holiday was over. After the trip, Lonnie followed through with her plan. Bud moved out and then came back for Christmas. However, after the holiday, he refused to leave. And Bud's anger toward Lonnie worsened. He became increasingly possessive, constantly wanting to know where she was, who she was with, and who she talked to. On January 6, 1981, Lonnie asked her father for money to help her and the kids get away from Bud. And although he didn't have much, he managed to give her three $20 bills. And remember this because it's going to be extremely important in a couple minutes. Following that conversation, Lonnie went to work as usual. After her shift, she picked up her children from the babysitter and took them home. Despite a blizzard forecasted for that night, Lonnie planned to tell Bud their marriage was over and she was leaving with the kids. But after that night, Lonnie was never seen or heard from again. And we have a lot more to cover. We're just scratching the surface. Let's take our first break and we'll be right back.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Now, according to Bud, he and Lonnie got into an argument that night, and neighbors later confirmed hearing banging noises coming from the house, something they were used to hearing from the Rogers home. Bud claimed that the last time he saw Lonnie was at 12:45 a.m. when he went to bed. He said he woke up around 2 a.m. to find that she wasn't home. Bud then woke up the children, dressed them, and drove them to the babysitter Sandy's house. It was now 3 a.m., and the blizzard had begun. Bud appeared nervous and told Sandy that Lonnie was gone. He said he was going to look for her and asked to borrow a blanket, which he took with him and never returned. Sandy found the whole situation to be really strange. Lonnie would usually drop the kids off at 8 or 8:30 a.m., never in the middle of the night without notice. A few hours later, Bud showed back up at Sandy's house and said he couldn't find Lonnie. Then he left again without the children. And instead of reporting Lonnie missing, Bud went to work and clocked in at the foundry at 6 a.m., He didn't mention to anyone that his wife and the mother of his children was missing. At this point, Sandy was beyond concerned. While she thought it was possible Lonnie could have left Bud, she knew Lonnie would never leave without her children. So when Sandy's daughter woke up, she asked her to call Lonnie's family and share what had happened. Lonnie's father and grandfather were immediately alarmed when they heard what was going on, so they went to Lonnie's house and saw that her car was still parked outside. Now, they were unable to get in, so understandably, they kicked down the door to the duplex. Once they were inside, they found the house spotless. Everything was perfectly clean and in place. Lonnie's wallet, keys, glasses, and hearing aids were all left behind. However, her boots, jeans, coat, and a king-size pink blanket were missing. Raymond immediately knew that something was wrong, so he called the police and reported Lonnie missing. Officers went to the house and waited for Bud to return. Meanwhile, Bud finished his shift at the foundry, picked up the kids from their babysitter, and went home. After he arrived, Bud told the police that Lonnie had simply left, and he even suggested that she may have run off with another man. When asked why he didn't report her missing, he said he wasn't concerned about her being gone. The police then asked to search Bud and found three $20 bills in his wallet, the exact amount and type of money Raymond had given Lonnie to leave Bud just the day before. When questioned about it, Bud claimed that Lonnie had handed the money over to him to pay bills. I know what you're thinking. Don't worry. You're not alone. I'm right there with you. However, Lonnie's father, Raymond, wasn't buying it, as Lonnie didn't trust Bud with money and had specifically asked for the cash to escape him. After speaking with Bud, the police did search the area around the house for Lonnie, but as you can imagine, the blizzard made it very difficult to cover much ground. It's important to note that Bud didn't participate in any of the search efforts. He was seen sitting in the upstairs window, watching as they combed through the snow and the freezing temperatures. He also never gave the police a full statement because there was no sign language interpreter available at the station. I also want to point out that there was no evidence collected from Lonnie's home, and the police later stated that this was because, quote, there was no sign of a struggle or blood at the scene. And I completely disagree with this. I don't understand how they would come to that conclusion just from what they visually saw. We already know that sometimes, especially after a crime scene is cleaned up, it may appear that there was no sign of struggle. There may appear that there's no blood. But when you get in there and do the actual forensics, whether that's luminol, fingerprint dusting, or whatever, you may uncover things that the criminal attempted to conceal. That's your job as the investigator, to find the things that the bad guys are trying to hide. By you just visually observing the surroundings and saying, yep, nothing here to see, you're doing exactly what the offender wanted you to do. Not the right call here, in my opinion. And as far as the overall investigation is concerned, as far as I can tell, that's essentially where it ended. And I don't understand for the life of me how that would be the case. There was no sign that Lonnie had left that residence. Her car was still there. Most of her belongings were still there. Yes, a couple pieces of clothing were gone, but she left without any money, without her hearing aids, without her car, and most importantly, without her children. Even though you may not have enough evidence to prove it at this point, it's highly likely that there's some type of foul play involved, especially when, as a law enforcement officer, you know that her husband has a very dark criminal background. How is that not at the top of your radar? There would have been much more of an investigation if I were involved. We would have went in there, forensically analyzed the crime scene, and without a doubt, we would have had an interpreter in there, and we would have been interrogating Bud. No doubt about it. Whether he liked it or not, he would have been given a full statement, or he would have been lawyering up. One or the other, his choice. And because there was really no investigation conducted, 5-year-old Allison and 3-year-old Aaron were stuck living with Bud, who was both mentally and physically abusive as well as neglectful, often leaving them home for days at a time without food. Because of this, CPS frequently removed the children from the home, and sometimes they would stay with Bud's family or friends, but due to Bud's control, they were never allowed to stay or even talk with Lonnie's family. When no one else would take them in, Allison and Aaron were placed into foster care, and eventually they would be returned to Bud, only for the cycle to repeat. And this is just heartbreaking to hear. Obviously, the loss of Lonnie, not knowing what happened to her, is one thing. It's terrible. But to think that these kids were forced to live with this monster, it just, as a father, it breaks my heart. Now, during this time while Allison and Aaron were living with Bud, Lonnie was rarely mentioned. The children weren't allowed to talk about her, and when Bud did bring her up, it was always in a negative way. He'd say things like, she ran away with a man, she didn't love you, or she left me with you. Just, this guy's an asshole, just a terrible human being. And that cycle of abuse continued for Allison until 1989, when she was 14 years old. One winter day, Bud forced her to ride in the bed of his truck and drove her to the police station. Once there, he made her tell the officer that she was bad and that he wouldn't be taking her back home. The officer told Bud that he couldn't just leave Allison at the station, but Bud refused to take no for an answer. The police officer then asked Allison if there was someone they could call to pick her up, and she suggested a few family members, but none were able to take her. Eventually, Allison gave them the number of her guidance counselor, Judy Densmore, who had told Allison to call her if she ever needed help. The officer called Judy, who rushed to the station and took Allison in. The Densmores later filed for custody of Allison, and with no pushback from Bud, they were granted sole legal and physical custody. The Densmores welcomed Allison into their home, and she stayed with them until she left for college. Aaron, however, stayed with Bud, and he continued to be kicked out of the house and bounced between friends and family. Eventually, Aaron left Bud's home for good and never went back. Good for him. Glad he got out of there. As the years went by, Judy worked with Allison to keep her mother's memory alive. Then, when Allison turned 18, Judy helped her contact the police about her mother's case. According to Allison, the police told her they had everything they needed to convict Bud of murder. However, without a body, the case was too circumstantial to take it to trial. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but to just put it right out there, you don't necessarily need a body to charge or convict someone of murder. We've seen it numerous times before. So if they really did think they had enough and the only thing they were missing was a body, that's not a justifiable excuse. They could have went forward. This wouldn't be the first case where it was done. Allison really wanted to pursue the case further, but her life was just beginning. College was only a few months away, so she decided to focus on moving forward, and she did. She graduated, got married, and started a family of her own. So fast forward to 2011, 30 years had passed since Lonnie's disappearance. State police investigator Dale Wilmer told the Meadville Tribune, quote, "It's like Lonnie vanished into thin air. We're still looking at it as a missing person case. We suspect foul play, but there's no evidence at this point." Lonnie's mother, Maxine, spoke to the Tribune as well, saying, quote, "It's been miserable the last 30 years. Not knowing where she is and what happened. My husband, Lonnie's father, died 10 years ago not knowing. We hoped and prayed we'd find out something before he died. I'm hoping and praying I find out something before I die." Sadly, in 2014, Maxine passed away after a short illness, never knowing what happened to her firstborn child. And the years continued to pass without any answers in Lonnie's case. So in 2021, after years of trying to move forward, Allison decided it was time to fully dedicate herself to seeking justice for her mother. She traveled to Pennsylvania to speak with the state police about Lonnie's disappearance. When Allison met with law enforcement, she was told Lonnie's case was still being handled as a civil missing persons case. She was shocked to learn that Bud was not considered a suspect or a person of interest. The police also refused to let Allison review any records, and when she asked if they were actively investigating, they told her they were too busy. So as you can imagine, this was not the information she wanted to hear. Around this time, Allison created the Justice for Lonnie Facebook group to share her mother's story and gather tips on her own. The group proved to be a valuable resource, and Allison began uncovering new information. We're going to discuss that right after this break.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
So let's talk about some of these tips, because now essentially Allison's playing detective because law enforcement isn't doing their job. So first off, a friend of Lonnie's reached out to Allison, revealing that she had taken a restraining order out against Bud shortly after Lonnie disappeared. The friend said that when she confronted Bud in public about Lonnie's disappearance, he proceeded to choke her. Allison also received a Facebook message from a man named Richard who had been friends with Bud. Now, according to Richard, Bud's former girlfriend Marie once told him about an incident that happened on Church Street in Waterford, which is around 20 minutes from Lonnie's home and 6 miles from Bud's work. Marie said that Bud had driven her to a wooded area on Church Street, parked the car, and then went into the woods while she stayed behind. When he returned, Marie asked if Lonnie was in the woods, and Bud became enraged and told her that if she ever said that again, she would end up there too. Marie later told Richard that if anything ever happened to her, he should look for her on Church Street. Richard also reported this information to the police, but shocker, they didn't act on it, calling it hearsay. And here's the thing, they're not wrong. It is hearsay, but this is not a court of law. They're not trying to determine whether something is admissible or inadmissible. They could have simply said, okay, Richard, where's Marie? We're going to talk to her directly and see if she confirms this story. And if she does, guess what, folks? It's no longer hearsay in a court of law or in an investigation. But from what we know, they didn't do that. So after that happened, Richard messaged Allison, who contacted the investigator handling Lonnie's case, and the investigator said there wasn't enough evidence to pursue the lead. How is there not enough evidence? All you got to do is pick up the phone, talk to Richard, get Marie's number, and see what happened. But they didn't do that. Allison did push the police to investigate further, but they refused, so Allison turned to the Facebook group for help. A woman who worked with cadaver dogs and had experience working with the state police volunteered to search the area on Church Street. Over the course of several months, the cadaver dogs were brought to the site, and every time they picked up a scent near the same tree. This led to even more members of the community stepping in to help. People brought in metal detectors, and one person even brought in an excavator. The tree was eventually uprooted, and the dogs continued to hit on it, but Lonnie was never found. Allison and others have speculated that the tree may have absorbed Lonnie's remains as she decomposed, which would explain why the cadaver dogs always picked up a scent there. And according to the University of Tennessee's Forensic Anthropology Center, plants and trees can absorb specific nutrients from a decomposing body, so this theory was certainly plausible. And it's also worth noting that in certain types of soil, a body can fully disintegrate after about 20 years with the bones even turning to dust, so this could potentially explain why no physical remains were discovered at the tree. In 2021, Allison gave her first media interview to Erie News Now. She spoke about her mom and how she would have never left her children behind with an abusive person. She then stated, quote, "I believe my father is responsible, and I believe that people know something that might help convict him." The Pennsylvania State Police then addressed Allison's comment to Erie News Now, stating, quote, "He is not officially a suspect in the case. He is listed as a person of interest. He's been reached out to several times. He's denied or not gotten back to us regarding this." They added that there was no evidence pointing to foul play in Lonnie's disappearance. And without having access to the case, I just don't know how you come to this conclusion. It's not only about the information that you find, but it's also about what you don't find. There has been zero activity or zero evidence to suggest that Lonnie left that house under her own power. You had multiple items that were at the house that she would have needed to go anywhere. And when you talk to all the family and friends, and they confirmed that Lonnie would have never left without the children and that she was planning on leaving Bud. More importantly, she was specifically given three $20 bills to do so. And you find those three $20 bills on the main suspect, who then lies and said that Lonnie gave it to him. You got to start building a case. Yes, circumstantial in nature. But once you start adding up those building blocks, it can actually show you what's going on. But you got to do the work. It's not going to hit you right in the face, and there may not be that smoking gun. But it doesn't mean that you don't have an actual case and that you may not potentially charge someone. So to me, it feels like they're giving up here, and it could be a situation where initially the case was not handled properly, and now you have new investigators who are looking at the case file saying, what are we supposed to do with this? After speaking to Erie News Now in 2021, Allison continued reaching out to the police and the DA's office whenever she could. She repeatedly asked them to move forward with the murder case, especially since Bud is now in his 70s. However, authorities have told her that without a body, they won't proceed. They still refuse to let Allison see any of the police reports, and when asked if they are actively working on Lonnie's case, they still say that they don't have any time. Despite these challenges, Allison is determined to continue advocating for and investigating her mother's disappearance. She even wrote a book about the case titled, quote, A Daughter's Journey and Story of Resilience. In addition, Allison also launched a petition called Lonnie's Law, which if passed would allow families to view police records in a secure setting after 20 years. And I have to tell you, I could not agree with the premise of Lonnie's Law more. This is absolutely what should be done. And remember here, secure setting. There's no reason after 20 years that you wouldn't allow immediate family members to come in and be debriefed by looking at what they have. Yes, are they going to be allowed to take the reports with them? Are they going to be allowed to scan them, photograph them? Probably not. But let's at least give them what we have. Let's take as much time as we need. It may be minutes, it may be hours, but allow them to read the reports. And if they want to go out and share it and potentially hurt the case, that's on them. But they have a right to know. It's their family member that they lost. It's their loved ones that have to suffer with this every single day. And if you haven't figured out who it was in 20 years, what are we doing? Even if you solve it at this point, I say this all the time, what justice has really been served? So if the family is adamant about seeing what you have after 20 years, the least you can do is allow them to come into the station and see if you're actively doing anything with it or what has been done before. Yes, are they going to have a lot of questions? Yes, is there going to be some scrutiny? Of course, deservingly so. You haven't solved it yet. Maybe it's something that you did as investigators, or maybe there's just not a lot there. I will tell you, I think people would be surprised how many families would understand after reading what has been done. Maybe they would look at it and say, okay, I get it. But when you keep everything so close to the chest and you hide it behind the explanation that it's for the integrity of the investigation, it's going to lead people to speculate and they're going to lose trust in law enforcement. Let's not do that. If 20 years have passed, let's loosen the restraints. Let's give them an opportunity to see what we have so far. Now, over the years, Allison has spent investigating her mother's disappearance. She has developed a theory about what she believed happened to Lonnie. Allison believes that Lonnie came home from work on January 6th. She told Bud that she was leaving him, and that's when he lost his temper. In her opinion, Bud choked Lonnie to death in a fit of rage, which would explain why there was no blood found in the house. Allison doesn't think Bud intended to kill her. His violence simply went too far. Allison also believes that in the hours after her murder, Bud decided to hide Lonnie's body. She suspects that when he dropped the kids off at Sandy's house and said he was going to search for Lonnie, he was actually looking for a place to hide her body and clean up the house to remove any signs of struggle, which might explain why the house was so spotless when they finally got to the duplex. Allison also thinks that Bud went back later to move Lonnie's body to a more secure location to make sure that no one ever found her. And as we sit here today, Allison believes people in the community know what happened to Lonnie, but are too afraid to come forward. And she understands their fear because she was once scared of Bud herself. But she's quick to remind everyone that now he's old, he's under scrutiny, and unable to hurt anyone the way he once did. So she encourages people to put their fears aside and finally come forward. As of January 2025, Lonnie had been missing for 44 years, and the police spoke to the Medville Tribune about the case and said it seemed as though she vanished without a trace. They added, quote, "One thing family and friends consistently have said is that she'd not have left home without her children." Unfortunately, that is the last update I have in Lonnie's case. She is still missing, and her loved ones remain desperate for answers, but there is still time to hold those accountable for their crimes. Okay, let's dive into this perspective and elaborate on some of the things I said during the episode. I do think I covered a lot, but let's start with the thing that probably pissed the most people off, that law enforcement is saying they just don't have the time to look into it. And I know that sounds terrible the way they're saying it, and I don't like it as much as you don't. But what I think might really be going on here is they don't have time to look into it, and they probably don't have anything to look into. Whatever paths could have been explored probably already were, and they don't have the time to invest in going out there and trying to reach people for new leads when they have all these other cases that they're working. And from a law enforcement perspective, I can understand that. There's new crimes happening every day with new victims, unfortunately, being created every day. And so you have to put those newer cases at a higher priority. And so I understand that. But what I don't understand is if you don't have the time to look into it and you don't have any leads to pursue, then why not allow other people to take the case over? Why not bring new sets of eyes in to look at what you have and see if they discover something that maybe you missed? And no, I'm not saying open it up to everyone, but let's let the family members look at it. If they have a private investigator they want to hire, let them do that. Or if an outside agency wants to assist and maybe just give it a once over, let's allow them to do so. What do you have to lose? It's been over 40 years. And that's why I want to go back to Lonnie's Law. It's not just this case. It's all the cases that I've discussed over the past 2 years on Detective Perspective where the case is 20 plus years old. And I've said it all the time. There has to be a spectrum. 5 years, I understand it. 10 years, I still get it. 15 years, okay, you're starting to lose me. 20 years, I think we can at least let the family look at it. 25 plus, let's open the floodgates. Let's get everything out there and see what we can do. As they say, let's throw it at the wall and see what sticks. I think that's at the point you have to be at. And I know sometimes in law enforcement, it's tough to admit, hey, we just don't have the capacity or the capability to solve this one, so we need your help. That's okay to do it. We see people out there that are members of the community who have different experiences, different backgrounds, who see these cases through a different light and bring a new perspective that reinvigorates the case and points it in a new direction and potentially leaves to a solve. But you know what would stop that from happening? By sticking to this old antiquated policy and saying, nope, we can't share this information with you. It's an active investigation, or I should say an open investigation. So we prefer to let it sit in our evidence room and collect dust. That's not the way to do it. Not in 2025. So to put it bluntly, Lonnie's Law needs to happen, not only in Pennsylvania, but on a federal level. And I want Allison to know that if it ever gets to a legislative level, I would 100% be there to support this. So let's dial it back for a second. That was kind of macro level. Let's get into the meta of this. This case is a troubling case because at this point, it's very possible that any remains of Lonnie are long gone, especially when we lay out some of the facts that I talked about in the case as far as decomposition and what could have happened to her body over the years. That's even if the body's on Church Street. It could have been in a body of water. It may not even be in the state. We do not know. But as I mentioned, you don't necessarily need a body. There can be a case where it's built on a totality of circumstances. Yes, circumstantial in nature with the individual facts, but when tied together, it paints a picture. So what do you do there? You go out, you gather every witness you can, you take a shot at Bud, see if he'll fold or at least give some discrepancies that you can use against him. You convene an investigative grand jury and see based on their opinions if there's enough to indict him. If you get that indictment, you take it to court, you see what happens, and you live with the outcome. I think Allison, I think Aaron, and I think the rest of Lonnie's family could live with that. What I don't think they want to live with is having Bud die and never knowing what if. That's what they don't want. They deserve more. So where do I fall on this one in case it's not abundantly clear? I agree with Allison. I think more than likely, Bud is responsible for the disappearance and unfortunate death of Lonnie. And we may never know that for certain, but the fact that she's never turned up again, I think it's reasonable to assume that more than likely she's not with us. And when you consider the evidence in the case, the fact that she left behind her purse, her hearing aids, and her car during a blizzard, where was she going to go? And let's not forget the most important thing to Lonnie that she left behind, her children. Based on everything we know about her, there is no shot in hell that she would have left her children with this abusive monster. I'm not buying it. So where does that leave us now? Well, like I said, we need to convene a grand jury and we want to gather as much evidence as we can before taking that shot. And that may come down to you because yes, we have some people who have come forward, but maybe there's more. So to recap, Lonnie Rogers was last seen on the evening of January 6th, 1981. And according to her husband, Bud, I say that loosely, she was last seen around 12:45 a.m. on January 7th at their home on Route 98 in Hatfield Township, Pennsylvania. Bud claims that Lonnie left in the middle of a blizzard after their argument, leaving behind all of her belongings, including her car, purse, hearing aids, medication, and most importantly, her children. So if you have any information about Lonnie's case, please contact the Pennsylvania State Police at 814-332-6911. And my final thoughts, as always, go out to Lonnie's friends and family, specifically her son, Aaron, and her daughter, Allison. Allison, thank you so much for being part of this episode and giving us the access and filling in the blanks. I always pride myself on being as accurate as possible when we cover these cases. And when family members are willing to help out with that, it makes it that much easier. So I can't thank you enough. And as far as what I said in this episode directly to you, Allison, we're here fighting for you, and I hope you get the justice you deserve. But at minimum, as you continue to fight for Lonnie's law, I want you to know that I'm here for you. If this gets to a legislative level where you'd like to have people who are in a public position step up, who are also former law enforcement, and say that I agree with this, and I think it would be valuable to not only law enforcement, but most importantly to the families, you have my word. I will be there for you. If that day comes, I will stand beside you. And I hope that day does come because I think you deserve it. And I think families across this country deserve it. So until that day comes, I'm going to be right here. That's going to do it for me. Everyone stay safe out there. And I'll see you soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.